Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. I'm Jackie Cation. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. If you like a determiner, FamilyPetAncestry.com, which I just renewed because it's funny. Let's do the credits. You just heard the song that Mike Rickberg composed and sang with his wife Sarah Cohen. He will sing his words to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio, and Vilmos does JackieCation.com, the website. DorkForest.com has available essentially player notes and the YouTube version of the show. You can listen to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and all the things, but you can also listen to it on YouTube or on dorkforest.com. JackieCation.com has all my stand-up comedy information and the merch for Dork Forest. You can get t-shirts, you can get CDs, you can get pins that say Spooky Reading Girl or Meat Shield, but they are not available on the website. You have to email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com. There's also the calendar of my stand-up comedy to find out where I'm playing near you. If I'm not playing near you, talk to your local comedy club and request me. What the heck? There are also videos of my stand-up. You can watch my Conan. You can watch clips from my DVD and links to my other podcast, The Jackie and Laurie Show on Nerdist, which is just about stand-up comedy. Anyway, there is also a donation button on both JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. It's a PayPal button. All it is a way to donate to support the show. You can do that by using the Amazon banner, which is just a link to get you to Amazon, which supports the show. You just order like normal. It doesn't cost you extra. And you can use the donation button just to donate. If you don't like PayPal, you can Venmo me, Jackie@JackieCation.com. There is also premium episodes at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com, and those cost $2 a piece because they're live episodes and they cost me some money to put up. So if you've run through all the episodes, you can go to Bandcamp and get like 10 more. What the heck? So much info. I'm sure I'm forgetting something. Thanks for supporting the show. Let's get into it. Hey, it's Jackie Cation, and I'm in my living room with Mark Waid. When we met, it was murder. No, but it was great. And we were on that podcast with J. Keith Van Stratton's.
That was a good time, actually.
Yeah, it was really fun. And it was, I was asked what I knew about, right. And then I did not have a depth of knowledge of comic books that I thought I had. Right. It turns out I was just looking at a list, and I was like, oh, no, I think I've read all of your Marvel, except for the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
And Irredeemable and Incorruptible.
Okay.
Blew my mind.
Thank you.
So that's an exciting thing for me. But you enjoy Superman, so we were going to talk about Superman.
Happy to talk about Superman. Anytime, anywhere.
Anytime, anywhere. And I'm rereading Birthright, which is also exciting for me.
Thank you.
So,
That's my favorite thing I ever wrote. Thank you.
Is it?
2,000 comic books, and that's my favorite thing I ever wrote.
Oh, wow. And it's really good.
Thank you.
Because I do love Superman.
Well, you know what it is? You can always tell, and you know this from being a creative person, you can always tell when somebody's passionate about something. It's years ago.
Oh, from the product?
Yeah. Years ago, I was an editor at DC Comics, and I was editing some book that objectively was not good. It was objectively not a good book.
Right.
But I still kind of enjoyed reading it, and I couldn't figure out why, and I asked my boss, and he said, well, it's because the guy who wrote it would write it for free.
Right.
And it shows.
Yeah.
And you can't fake that X factor. You can't fake that enthusiasm. And that was the X factor that made it readable to me. So.
Okay. And I went X factor and I was like, was it Peter David?
It wasn't Peter David.
But it was DC. Yeah. So, of course, it was not. And my knowledge of.
A little inside baseball for you there.
It was beautiful. I love. I think you're right about the passion is that you can tell, or in stand up anyway, is I could tell, I'm like, oh, they love this so much.
Yeah.
They aren't great at it, but maybe they will be because everything – it turns out you start doing things because you don't know how to do them.
Right.
And then you keep doing them and that's how you learn.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It'll be fine. Anyway, so Superman.
Yeah.
You've also written Batman.
I've also written Batman.
And Justice League.
And Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and Flash and the Fantastic Four and Captain America and the X-Men and Archie Comics.
Right.
And everything.
Absolutely everything.
Yes.
And the Princess Leia run that I loved,
Thank
actually.
You.
So, but the – what is it What is it that makes Superman your favorite? A question you've been asked a thousand times.
I will tell you my story.
Please.
So growing up, I love comic books, as most kids did, but I really loved it. I got into the Batman TV show, the Adam West Batman TV show, and so okay. I loved comics. But I loved a lot of other things, too. I loved magic tricks, and I loved broadcasting, and I loved – like there was a bunch of stuff that I loved when I was passionate when I was a kid. Comics was a big part of it. I wasn't particularly a Superman fan. I did not like Superman.
Oh, did you watch the Superman TV?
I didn't, actually, because we live in the Deep South.
Okay.
Where there was no syndication. There was one syndicated channel. So
right.
So I never saw the Superman TV show until I was a young adult, which is okay. very strange. So so we're talking like the late 70s, and I grew up – and I don't want to overcharacterize this as tragedy. It's not that. It's just that I grew up in a very complicated household. I grew up in a very
sure.
complicated where it wasn't
that sounds like a mess.
Yeah, it wouldn't, you know, it wasn't it long story short, I just didn't feel like anybody really cared whether I was alive or dead. I really
right.
didn't get that sense. That's not fair looking back to the people who were, but and no one's a villain in this, but I'm just saying
everybody always does the best they can.
Everybody does the
but
best
you
they
were
can.
A child.
But they and I was not I did not feel cared for. I did not feel wanted. I did not feel appreciated. And on January 26, 1979, I went in to see Superman the movie, Christopher Reeve.
Right.
And I saw it twice in a row, sat there twice in a row. And I went into that theater liking Superman. I came out of that theater knowing that whatever I was going to do with the rest of my life, it was going to have something to do with Superman.
That is real. That's a cool story.
That was my origin. That's my secret origin.
That became...
That's when I realized, oh my God, that I found everybody gets to pick their own religion, right? Everybody gets
right.
to choose their own religion. And I knew that even then, I mean, I know he's a fictional character. He's not
right.
real. I understand that. I'm not
right.
crazy. But that said, it took me a while to process this. And it took me until I was an adult to process this. But what happened was I went in there thinking nobody cared about me.
Right.
But Superman cares about everybody.
Right.
Cares about everybody, no matter who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that just reached out to me at a very crucial time of my life and touched me at a very important point when I was, you know, mid-teenager.
Right.
And made all the difference. And so ever since then, it's been Superman all the way. I ride or die.
That is kind of fascinating because I remember seeing Superman at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're probably same age. And it blew my mind because I read a lot of fiction
mm-hmm.
and I was always looking sort of for sort of a definition
yeah.
of bravery or
yeah.
a definition of standing up for what was right.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite definitions was always to do something even though you're scared to do it.
Sure.
Yeah. To do the right thing even though you're scared.
Right.
And I felt I never got the impression that because some of the criticisms of Superman is that he's so powerful.
Right. Then you can't do anything with him. You can't hurt him. He's boring. Blah, 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 blah.
Right. Right. You've heard
yeah.
it, I'm sure.
A million times.
A million times. But I never got the impression that he didn't have flaws or fear or that he wasn't a person.
Of course he was a person. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is just – he's – this nonsense of, well, he's so strong, you can't do anything with him, he's dull. That's just crap. Look, here's the thing. Yeah, that's true. It takes kryptonite to hurt him or whatever. But still, he's a human being. He's very vulnerable inside. He cares about everybody. He really – the fate of everyone in the world, the whole – you know, the way he feels about everybody. He looks out for everyone as a guardian angel. Therefore, anything that is a hurt to the human race is a hurt to him.
Right. Yeah. Which is why Irredeemable
yeah.
was so interesting.
Thank you.
Because – he can hear everything.
Yeah.
He can hear every slight. He can hear every insecure other person on the planet
yeah.
slam him. And eventually the Chinese water torture that is
yep.
makes the character an irredeemable snap.
Exactly. That is pretty much my answer to what if Superman grew up with Ayn Randian parents.
Yeah. right.
Like he did in the movies. But what if he grew up, you know, not everybody is emotionally equipped to be a superhero.
Right,
so
right.
So that was my answer. He's Superman's origin, basically, but this super powerful character with, you know, all this might and so forth. Suddenly he realizes that he just wants to be loved to a point where it makes him unstable.
Right, right. It's interesting because, no, I'm always curious. Now, I've not always been curious about it. I'm just now curious.
Yes.
Is it nature or nurture that makes a superhero?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
I tend to think it's nurture as much as anything else. I think right. I would tend to balance it toward nurture versus nature.
Right, because did you see the Deadpool 2?
Yeah.
I have the DVD, and in one of the extras, he goes back to kill baby Hitler.
Yep.
And so...
Well played, Deadpool.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's just holding him yeah. at the end of it. And it's... spoiler alert. You're not going to miss him. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. Because you don't want to watch him kill a baby anyway.
No.
So I do think it's nurture, because I read Red Sun,
yeah.
which is him being raised in the Soviet Union,
right.
with just a different ideology.
Yeah.
His parents weren't evil.
Right.
He wasn't a bad guy. Right. He was just had a different indoctrination.
Yeah.
So here's my other question is the Batman TV show.
Right.
This has been this, and I forget, it might have been my friend Dash who the best definition of Batman's. Batman the TV show is one of my favorite Batmans.
Sure.
Because his superpower seemed to be that he was the only adult.
Yes. That's just it. He was the only grump. The police looked at him like he ran the police.
Yeah. He was like, well, that isn't okay. Let's get our suits on.
Which is really paradoxical because if you look at the reason that – so, Adam West is about that time like 35 or so. And Burt Ward is – like 25 playing 16.
Oh, right.
But how they do this, if you look closely, how they make these characters look even younger
yeah.
is that everyone else in the cast came over on the Mayflower, right?
Oh, right. You're right. Everybody is super old.
Everyone's super old on that show except for Robin and Batman. So that's
how you make a 35-year-old look 25.
And yet, there you go. But you're right. He's the adult in the room.
Yeah, that seems to be his real superpower.
Yeah, that and earnestness. I would say his superpower is earnestness.
He's also very earnest.
Yes.
I think that what it was – because the one criticism I've heard about Batman yeah. is that – and it made me laugh, but is that – Batman could fix a lot of the problems in Gotham if he would open like 3 factories
yeah.
and employ a bunch of people.
Employ a bunch of people, yeah.
Yeah, but he wants to buy Batarangs.
Yes.
And it's his money.
It's his money and it's a more expedient way of doing things, I understand. Yeah.
You get it.
Yeah.
It's okay, so what else do you want to tell me about Superman? There's questions I have, but I feel like they've been asked of you. It's T-ball.
Yeah.
So the origin yeah. of Superman.
Right.
That once you saw the 1979 movie, yeah. you had to go back and go, where did Superman come from?
Yeah.
How do I make this part of my life?
Right.
And what was that? What did you do there? I mean, did you go and read Cavalier and Clay or whatever?
No, that's a good question. Actually, I mean, I absorbed everything. I mean, at that point, I was already a living encyclopedia of comic book knowledge.
Oh,
and so, and I just continued to be that. It was osmosis. There was nothing about Superman, whether, you know, his fictional character or his creators that I wouldn't read about, that I wouldn't absorb, that I wouldn't pay attention to. And it just became, again, it's become a fixture in my life. It's, you know, like, everybody gets to pick their own religion.
Okay. And so the people who wrote the intro to Birthright
yeah.
were Smallville
yeah.
Folk. So yeah. you watched – have you watched every iteration?
I have read every Superman story ever published.
Okay.
I have seen every show. I have listened to every radio broadcast. There's no one else on Earth who has exposed himself to as much Superman material as I have. There's not a single Superman story that I'm aware of
okay.
that I have not read or listened to or watched or whatever.
Or seen in some way, mm-hmm. shape, or form. Okay. So the first Supermans – were 1939, right?
Right, 38.
Or 38?
Yeah.
Okay. And who wrote it?
Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Jerry Siegel was the writer. Joe Shuster was the artist.
Okay.
The two 17-year-old boys from Cleveland who came up with this larger-than-life figure.
Okay.
In like 1933 and wanted to make a comic strip out of it.
Yeah.
And had this brilliant idea, and they sent it out to every comic strip syndicate in America, and everybody turned it down.
Absolutely.
Everyone flat out, just this is ridiculous. No one would believe this. This is too off the charts.
Even though he was an alien.
Even though he was an alien. Because, again, science fiction was not really a part of our vernacular in 1933, 1934.
Right.
It was, you know, I'm not even sure the phrase had been – I'm not sure who Gernsback had
– And it certainly wasn't anything that was mass produced
at
all.
Ever. Exactly.
Okay.
Well,
so.
And, that, and really even the visual manifestations of Superman were not something that we would be used to. Like the idea that the first time we see Superman, he's lifting a car over his head
right.
and pounding it into a cliff. And the publisher took one look at that cover
yep.
and said, that is ridiculous. Don't put Superman on the cover anymore. And so Action Comics cover, the next bunch of Action Comics covers were a bunch of like soldiers for hire and, you know,
oh my
racketeers
God.
And stuff. And eventually they did research and they realized that the kids were asking for the comic book with Superman in it. So they thought, well, let's put him on another cover.
Okay.
And they left him off another couple of issues. But this idea that it was just, it was so ridiculous a concept that
yeah.
the publisher said, no one will want to see this. Is insanely short-sighted.
Right, right. Yeah. And weirdly, and their idea was just that it was too much, too much larger.
It was too ridiculous. Exactly, yeah.
It's like, this is what children would write.
Right, yes.
And it was what children would write.
They were writing, yes, exactly. They came up with it when they were 17 years old. They were kids.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, but they obviously struck a nerve, and yeah. so they didn't publish till 38.
Right. Finally, it was through the slush pile. Comic books had not been created yet, or barely been created in 1933 when these guys came up with this. So they were looking at a newspaper strip is what they
okay.
wanted.
Okay. Oh. Mark Trail.
Exactly. And they circulated and circulated. Nobody wanted it. And finally, it ended up in the slush pile of a company called National Periodicals that was
okay.
starting to eventually became National Periodicals, Detective Comics. That slush pile, and they were looking to create a brand new comic book because they realized they'd done a couple of these comic books before.
Which did they think of them as just compiling strips?
That's all they were for the first like 2 or 3, 4 years of comics existence. They were just newspaper strips compiled into magazine form.
Okay.
And it wasn't until like
and it was relatively popular,
really?
So they were like, oh.
So eventually
let's
somebody said, well,
this.
You know, we kind of went. It was pretty much the idea that by the time National got around to wanting to do their own comics, the licenses for all the major newspaper strips had already been scooped up. So really, what choice do we have but to do our own original stuff
right.
and put it in comics? And that took off. And so when they wanted to put together a brand new comic called Action Comics, a big, you know, anthology book, they were looking through the slush pile and looking for stuff to put in it. And lo and behold, there's the Superman thing. Let's give this a whirl and see if anybody cares.
What was the first story? I've never read Action Comics number one, and that's what that would have been,
yeah.
right? It would have been. Okay.
It's great. He is – he is just a take no prisoners, you know, a liberal hero. He's just he's a social justice warrior.
Okay, by definition,
I mean, when that first story, he's doing stuff like he came across a wife beater and just threw him through a wall.
You go.
He finds a bunch of everything. It's a lot of little adventures. I can't tell you like the big story because it's really just sort of episode. But
right.
it's just. A few pages of Superman dealing with a wife beater. A few pages of Superman dealing with a guy who is going to the chair for reasons that, you know, he's been framed. And so he's got sort of stuff like that.
Okay.
But
so he's just correcting errors.
He's correcting errors, but he's doing it in sort of a brute fashion, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And for the first year or so of that whole strip, there were no supervillains. There was no kryptonite. There wasn't anything like that. So Superman's adventures were basically social justice things. Like here's an adventure about a bunch of orphans who are being abused by an orphanage.
Right.
So let's do something about that. Here's a story about a coal miner who's a coal baron.
Yep.
Whose coal mine is
unsafe.
And so let's go teach him a lesson. It
right.
was all. There
okay.
is yeah the very first Superman Sunday because he went to the he finally did do the newspaper strips and he finally went to the Sunday strips and the very first Superman Sunday I love this is Superman comes into an evil banker's office, a crooked banker's office,
right,
lifts up a safe and says, and I quote, and this is absolutely true, he says, nice place you got here, be a shame if anything happened to it. That is
about Superman.
As far away from Christopher Reeve as you can get, and yet there's something so electrically fascinating about that character.
It's sort of this, but in some ways it's the same guy.
Oh yeah,
because yes, Christopher Reeves was very much a sort of a gentle, powerful giant.
He didn't
have
a temper like the original Superman did.
Right,
exactly. He wasn't. You could make a case that the original Superman was a bully, but. He was a bully to the right people.
Right, right. And essentially corrected what was in front of him.
Sure.
Like, didn't try to – like, if there were no supervillains
right.
and you had a superpower,
yeah.
you would fix the thing in front
of you. That's what you would do, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You were like, why? Why did you do – like, in Birthright,
yeah.
when there's a kid shooting up the high school,
right.
he goes and finds where they bought the guns.
Yes.
And he nails that guy to the wall with a bunch of guns.
Yes.
He's like,
yeah, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's that. That's the same story.
Yes.
That's a great slice. Of, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So that the first couple issues are just regular crimes,
right,
or first, regular injustices.
Yeah, for the first like year or so of the of those, because it ran in Action Comics every month, and then Superman Comics was their second. They really, we had Superman so popular, we got to give him his own comic books. They did, and so he's appearing in two books a month, or two books at once. So the problem with doing these social injustice stories is that you're burning through them pretty quickly,
right?
And there is a point about a year and a half in where Superman decides that there are too many unsafe cars on the streets of Metropolis. So he puts all of the car dealers on notice and says, I'm taking all the unsafe cars off the street, just let you know. And he goes and destroys a car lot because they're selling lemons. And he goes to a car manufacturer that's deliberately selling substandard cars and destroys the factory. I think maybe you're punching down at this point.
Right, right. At this point.
Maybe you're punching down.
Take a break and look for a topic.
So eventually, Siegel and Schuster realized, well, we kind of run out of social issues. It's time to maybe bring some supervillains into the mix. Something that,
genuine
bad guys or genuine menaces that can hurt Superman.
Right.
But the first couple of years, like I said, is just straight up social justice stuff.
And how long did they write for? Because they were young.
They were young. What happened was, this is a fairly famous story. I mean, Siegel and Schuster sold Superman to what became DC Comics for $130.
Yikes.
That was it.
Well,
and some,
you never know,
and some royalties and stuff, and you, sure. And you never, and, but you never know,
right?
Well, of course, it turned out to be this incredibly,
right?
So, in the late 40s, they sued.
Oh, they were like, "Come on,
yeah." Now,
I want the suit to be called that. Come on,
yeah. And I can, I can make a good case for that suit. I can, it is not fair to think that they were so miserably treated that they were wearing barrels,
right?
And eating off the street. I mean, they were millionaires.
Okay, they could afford lawyers.
They could. Well, yeah. Unfortunately, they afforded a really awful one. It's a guy that Siegel met in the service, and he was like military grade awful as a lawyer.
Oh my god.
Charged them out the wazoo. They sued DC Comics. They lost painfully.
Yeah.
And they made a few bucks.
Yeah.
But they were then ostracized off Superman. Then they were just told, no more work from DC Comics. We're taking your name off the strip.
Yeah.
And you're nobody. And so that's the – so.
And I'd never heard of them.
Right.
So.
Schuster never went back to working in DC. Siegel finally – in the mid-60s, early 60s, went back to D.C. sort of hat in hand.
Right.
And begged for his job back. He was always sort of – he was – and I'm not kidding. He was Clark Kent. He was very much the nebbishy in real life.
Mild-mannered.
Mild-mannered.
Right.
Bespectacled, meek, timid guy.
Yeah.
And so he went hat in hand and begged for a job, and he worked for D.C. Comics for another, 6-7 years.
Right.
And then copyright renewal came up, and so he sued again for Superman, and he lost again, and therefore, and he was put out on the street again.
Right.
So
who started writing it when they left, or when they
– a bunch of different guys. I mean, it was – at first it was Siegel, and we're supposed to believe it was just Siegel, but I've seen evidence that it's like his brother-in-law is doing some stories and his cousin's doing some stories and stuff. That's fine. So,
right, we all get stories from our loved ones.
Exactly.
Are you kidding me?
But after that, it just
became – people have great stories.
After that, it just became an open rotation of whoever freelancers felt like doing something.
Right. So what are your favorite early ones that are not from them?
Not from them. There's a few, but there's a magic that is lost once they are gone.
Okay. That has to be
Now you're working with people who aren't in love with it. Because get back to what we were saying before, you're not in love with it, right?
Uh-huh.
You're not. It's a job, and there's some good Superman stories there. But what really gave Superman a shot in the arm, came about 1958. There was this editor named Mort Weisinger. He was a staff editor.
Okay.
He was, by every account, a complete asshole.
Okay.
There is no one in all of comics history who ever worked with him who ever had a kind thing to say about Mort. And this is the thing we know about Mort.
So what we know is that Mort was an asshat.
I talked to his kids. His kid, actually, his son rang me up angry one day because I'd written something in a magazine about how Mort was universally
known
reviled.
To be a jackass.
And
yes.
How dare you say that about my dad? And he's so in within 5 minutes, as we're talking about his dad, he's
right.
telling me stories that would make your hair turn white about the things he did to his son and
right.
his daughter that
right.
were complete indefensible asshole. Exactly. Yeah. So, but he had a vision. He knew to hire the right people. He knew to hire the right artists and the right writers. And with, under his tutelage, under his on his watch, in about 1957, 1958, he took over the Superman books creatively, and went to the, he had his stable of writers. There were Edmond Hamilton, who was a big science fiction writer of the 30s and 40s, and a bunch of other, Otto Bender, who had been doing a lot of comics over the years. He'd written Captain Marvel forever, and he was against something. You're getting the best guys in comics. You're getting the best guys who were still writing comics. And Mort had a rule, which is, we're going to expand the mythos. We're going to give him all kind of new villains and all kind of new places and all kind of new locales. But the idea is, every 6 months we want something new.
Okay.
Whether it's a different kind of kryptonite, or it's something else from Krypton that we didn't know about, or some other relative that we never met, or whatever. Just something.
And invent something.
Right. And so that's the silver – it's called the Silver Age of DC Comics, the Silver Age of Superman, from 1958 to about 1966 or so, where it was just every few months – something new to broaden that whole mythos, so then it becomes like a big giant continuity of really cool stuff.
Okay, so the original guys invented kryptonite, and did they introduce?
Actually, they did not.
They did not.
Actually, the kryptonite was actually, well, I can make a case either way.
Okay.
Here's what happened. You asked.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you.
No, please.
Okay. It might be good.
Let's do this.
Might be a good time for other people to go make a sandwich, but I'm going to finish the story. In 1940, this gets back to this idea that they were running out of things to talk – they were running out of things to write about, right? And they hadn't invented supervillains yet, and so they were trying to figure out what to do with Superman. So Siegel wrote a story in which Superman encountered some weird metal from the planet Krypton. It wasn't called kryptonite. It was just – they didn't know what it was called. He didn't have a name for it, and it made him weak. So that's the precursor to kryptonite. It's not kryptonite yet. But more interestingly about that story is that in that story also, Lois Lane learns that Superman is Clark Kent, and it's permanent at that point. It's like it's clear from that story now this strip has changed. Now they will become partners in crime.
There we go.
That's a huge big thing.
Yeah.
And so DC looked at this story. Management looked at the story and said, no, you're don't wreck the – I mean we don't we don't know exactly what's making this work.
Right.
So don't wreck –
So don't break it.
Don't break it, exactly. Okay. And so that story went in the drawer, and it wasn't found again until 1988 when I found it personally.
What?
When I was on staff at DC Comics.
Yes!
And I was in the library mulling around, and I found this big box of Jerry Siegel
sitting
scripts.
In your happy place, essentially. Really, you
know, absolutely, yes. Yes. When I die, that's where I'm going. It's the DC library.
Exactly.
I found this big giant box of old carbon copies of Jerry Siegel scripts from the the 1930s and 1940s. And I was fascinated by this. Nobody had ever looked in this box before.
Right.
And so I started going through the scripts and matching them up to printed stories.
Right.
And I found the one script that didn't match anywhere. And I started looking through it, and I realized we've seen pages of this thing. It was all drawn.
Okay.
We've seen pages of this thing over the years here and there, but nobody had ever seen the whole story together, knew what
right.
you know, knew how explosive the story would have been to the mythos and how it would have changed everything.
Yeah.
So I dug it out. And I brought it to DC. I brought it to my bosses at DC. I said, we got to publish this. We got to find some way to publish this somehow. And
right.
let's find an artist. And all we got to do is get Jerry Siegel to sign off on it, because he's on decent terms with DC at that point. Because DC
right.
had, in 1975, DC had settled with him and Joe Shuster and finally given them a pension and given their credits back and so forth.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the happiest story, because they still didn't get a giant amount of money, but they got
right.
a decent amount of money. So Siegel was in decent – decent terms with DC, but he was very volatile, always very volatile.
Right.
I read his autobiography once, and oh my God. And nobody's read his autobiography, because it's not been published.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's like 100 pages, single space pages of like this angry screed. He wrote it in like the early 70s when he wanted Superman back, and he felt he was bitter and angry.
Personally attacked.
And not unjustifiably, but still.
Right.
The whole thing, it's just rage on the page. It doesn't even make any sense. He's just giving his autobiography and talking about his whole life story and all of his stuff. But everything is just this bitterness, this huge bitterness is hanging over it. So he was a volatile guy. So we went to Jerry Siegel and said, hey, listen, we want to publish this. Is that okay? And he said, no.
Great.
All right. Well, can't force it.
Nope.
So no one's ever seen the story.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
There's always a part of me that's like, because, never say no without a number.
Yeah.
You don't just say no.
Yeah.
You say, you ask for the number that's ridiculous.
That's just it.
And then they say, well, we don't have that money.
They would have paid it then.
They would have paid it.
It was the 50th anniversary of Superman. They were doing all kind of stuff. This would have been the perfect capstone to that. So that said, I'm trying to remember how we got off onto this curve, but we were talking about kryptonite. We're talking about.
Oh, right. No, because.
Oh, Superman. So, okay.
It was not called kryptonite.
And it never appeared in the comics. So. 1942, 1943, Superman's also on the radio, doing a 15-minute-a-day serial adventure story on the radio. And the guy who played Superman wanted a vacation.
Yeah.
But he can't take – he's the star of the show, and it's a daily show. So what do? So they invented something called kryptonite to make him weak so they could have a long continuity of him just kind of lying in a corner with criminals having captured him and holding him captive, and he's groaning and moaning. Well, you can get anybody for that.
Yeah.
You know, so he can go – Bud Collier, you get to go take a few weeks off in the Caribbean or whatever.
There you go.
And so that's where kryptonite was invented, to give the guy who did the radio show a vacation.
Oh, that's perfect.
But then it became such a really good plot device that.
Who was the guy who played the radio guy?
Bud Collier.
Okay. My ad. I'm about to do an ad. Hey guys, it's Simple Contacts. Remember them? They're the most convenient way to get your contact lens prescription renewed and stock up on your brand of contacts. Instead of taking time off and spending hours at the doctor just to renew your prescription, you can now do it online in under 5 minutes. By the way, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. You still need to do that, but it is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts. So check out Simple Contacts and get $20 off. You just go to simplecontacts.com/dorkforest20. Here's how it works. You take a quick self-guided vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor in 24 hours, and if your vision hasn't changed, you receive a renewed prescription and reorder your brand of contacts. It's simple. You can skip the office visit, but not the care. So if you have an unexpired prescription, you can use that too. Just upload a photo of it on your doctor's info on the app and order your lenses in minutes for a great price. They do all the hard work for you. Buying more contacts has never been easier, and why should it be hard in the first place? The prescription is $20. Shipping is free. Best of all, listeners get $20 off their first Simple Contacts order. You just go to simplecontacts.com/dorkforest20, or you can just enter dorkforest20 at checkout. Do it! Let's get back into the show. And isn't there something where everybody who played Superman had some horrible accident? Again, is it something that's not real?
I don't think that's really real. It sounds cool to say, oh, it's a Superman curse. All the bad. But, you know,
right.
The worst thing that happened to Dean Cain is that he worked for Fox News. That's the worst. You know. So it's.
Exactly.
It's, you know, if you
yeah.
It's the same thing when you say, oh, it's. You know, deaths always come in threes in Hollywood.
Right.
Well, yeah, they do if you look hard enough.
Sure. Exactly.
There's always going to be a third. It's that sense you're looking for a pattern that doesn't exist.
Right. Fair enough. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I did like Lois and Clark. I thought that was a really great show.
That was a really smart take on the mythos. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that one worked.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, is that on Netflix?
I know it's streaming somewhere, but I don't remember where.
Might be Hulu. Okay. Anyway, I've got them all.
Yeah.
And rabbit ears.
Yes.
So it's probably playing on MeTV right now.
Yeah.
So we're at like 1950. We're at like actually 1966.
Right. At this point, yeah. But by that time, the whole idea of let's expand the mythos, there's only so far you can expand it before it just starts to collapse under its own weight and just becomes silly. And now he's coming up with superpowers that are ridiculous.
He has a dog.
And he's got a dog with heat vision and a cat. His cousin Supergirl has a cat with heat vision, and she's fallen in love with a superpowered horse.
Right.
And all that sounds funny now. But in context, it's very charming. Remember, this was for children.
Right.
This was for children, so it's easy to look back, and I do it too. I mean, it's easy for me to make fun of it too.
Right, you can riff.
You know, riff and look back on that stuff and how absurd that was, but it's for kids.
Yeah, and let them like it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. They could put them all together like the Pet Avengers.
Yeah.
And then
they
can have perfectly good adventures, which I thoroughly enjoy the Pet Avengers.
They in fact have the
have they?
The Legion of Super Pets.
Oh, the Legion of Super Pets?
Comet the Super Horse. It was Crypto the Super Dog. It was Streaky the Super Cat. And it was Beppo the Super Monkey who came from Krypton.
Oh, fair enough.
Yes.
And are they all Superman
They're all Superman
related.
But, okay. Except for the horse. The horse is a magic horse. Didn't come from Krypton.
Okay.
But still wears the Superman shield around his neck and stuff.
Right,
so,
yeah. Right. Good wants
big
to fit
cape, red cape. Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. It's part of a family.
Yeah.
So, and so the Legion of Super Pets.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I wish to read the Legion of Super Pets as well.
If you go with it with that sort of open-eyed, you know, open-hearted, realizing this is just charming stuff for kids, then it's pretty cool to read. If you have any cynicism to you, then it's not going to be fun to read, and it's going to be – you're just going to be –
don't read that.
But
read a different comic book.
Exactly. So it's my feeling, it's easy to make fun of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's but it's not rewarding. It's rewarding to actually go look – if you were – akin, if you like it, it's rewarding to go back and look at it and go, oh, this is something that's kind of whimsical and funny.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I think in all of the different comics, there's always a there's always a great couple of pages,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
Even if I don't like the whole thing.
It's going to be something.
There's going to be something there that I'm like, oh, I'm glad I read that.
Yeah.
And I like pets. I like a teen superhero.
There you go.
I like a variety of things that and if it's powerful and sad,
yeah.
I usually don't want to start it, but I'm glad that I did in the end because it changed my life in some other way.
You can even in those whimsical children's stories, you can tell stuff with some power. You can tell stuff with some impact, with some emotional impact.
For sure.
I'll tell you my favorite Superman story.
Yeah.
I have two favorite Superman stories, but this is my favorite one when I read as a kid. And this is going to sound ridiculous as I synopsize it.
Okay.
Because, again, it's for children.
You were a child at the time?
I was a child.
Okay.
So
how old were you?
I was, when I first read the story, like 8, 9 years old.
Okay.
So it's a story called, this is 1962, it's a story called Superman Owes $1 Billion.
Ooh.
And the conceit of the story is this. And, again, we can make fun of this all we want, and it is goofy, and it is ridiculous, and it is completely implausible. But within the context of the Superman world,
it's wonderful.
It's wonderful.
Okay.
So a well-meaning IRS agent realizes that Superman has never paid income tax. Now, he doesn't have a job per se,
right.
But he still arranges for donations to charities. He still does all kinds of he does this and that and so forth. Reward money comes in and he donates it to hospitals or whatever. That's still taxable income. So the guy runs the numbers and stuff, and he realizes, okay, Superman, you owe $1 billion to the IRS.
Oh, my God.
And instead of incinerating him with heat vision, Superman says, all right, well, because this is, again, Superman is an authority figure to children. And he's going to play by the rules. And so he's, okay, well, I got to come up with $1 billion. What do I do? But Superman doesn't charge for his services because that's just wrong.
Right.
So then the entire rest of the story is a comedy of errors. In which he finds some ancient Atlantean statue that's going to be priceless, except that the Atlanteans catch up with him and go, oh, you found that thing. That's so awesome. Thank you for finding that thing
right.
for us. Or he finds a bunch of discarded ivory tusks that, you know, didn't take them. He wasn't the poacher. I'm saying he found a bunch of discarded ivory tusks. Like, okay, these are worth money. And then Bizarro, the strange alternate version of Superman, the strange backward version of Superman shows up and uses a ray and turns these ivory bars into ivory soap. And so they are useless. So it's this after this after this. And so you get to the end of the story and Superman shows up and he says, well, you know what? I missed the deadline. I couldn't do it.
Right.
And then,
do I have to go to jail?
What do I do now? And that's when the IRS guy's boss comes in the door and says, let me explain something to his underling. He says, if you're going to be a stickler of the rule, if that's what you're all about, the rules, then what you have to also bear in mind is that under the United States tax code, and this is the early 60s, everyone is due a $600 deduction for every deductible, every deduction they can take, every dependent.
That's
right?
Where I went.
Every $600 for every dependent. Well, the whole world depends on Superman. Depends on Superman.
I'm getting a little choked up.
Exactly.
Actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is my point. And so if anything, we owe him money. So
yeah.
So that again, silly. And then that moment of heart of the whole world depends on Superman.
Yeah.
It was really gripped me as a kid, and that's why I love Superman right there.
Yeah. That is That's awesome. So now my next question is Bizarro Superman. Where did that come from?
It came from the newspaper strip for a while, and then it graduated into the comics. And it was a guy named a writer named Alvin Schwartz, to give credit where credit is due, came up with the idea. The idea is that some well-meaning inventor tries to create a duplicating race. He can make food for everybody, or gold that we can whatever. Right. And unfortunately, it doesn't work. It actually creates an imperfect duplicate of Superman that is craggy looking and white skin with chalky faces.
Right.
It looks kind of like Superman, but has all the same powers, but is backward, and everything he does is the opposite.
Okay.
Everything he does, if you say fly up, he flies down. If he says I'm going to leave now, it means he's going to stay. It's just ridiculous backward language.
Okay.
And that was a really popular character for a long time. He had his own strip.
Right. Well, because wasn't he evil?
Yeah, but he was never really like maliciously evil.
Okay.
He was always just sort of.
He was just kind of weirdly backwards.
Weirdly backwards.
Yeah.
He's always decent. There's a decent heart in there.
Right, right, right.
But he's doing evil things.
Is there an evil Superman?
There have been a few evil Supermen over the years, yeah.
Okay.
But nobody with that same level of power.
Okay, so it's not Superman with a mustache.
Right, exactly. Okay. I'm sure there have been alternate universe stories of one-offs here or there and stuff where we've seen evil Superman. Yeah.
Right, okay.
But nobody who's like a regular recurring villain in the strip.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. And then what about the Phantom Zone? Like, the first two Superman movies are my favorite.
Yeah.
And I think I only own the third one. Okay. Weird. Very weird.
That's very odd. Okay.
I don't know why that happened.
We have to get you up.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. I don't understand. Because I think the Christopher Reeve 1979 one is actually on Netflix right now. So
I think it's somewhere,
I have
yeah.
watched it a couple of times.
Yeah.
You can download it and just have it on your phone.
Yeah.
But
as I do.
As you would.
Right. Yes.
As you should.
Yeah.
Are those three characters from the books?
The Phantom Zone girls.
Yeah.
General Zod's from the comics.
Okay.
But Ursa and Non, who were not from the comics, but they were later brought into the comics. There was a weird codicil in the Mario Puzo was the writer who first wrote the first Superman movie script.
Okay.
The Godfather, that guy.
Yeah, that guy?
Yes.
Oh, God.
And he did first draft, second draft, third draft, but it wasn't until they brought other writers on to, as Hollywood does,
right.
to turn it into something. But it was something weird in Puzo's contract where things that were in the movie were not automatically owned by DC Comics for use in other media.
Oh, wow.
So
that is a very powerful deal maker, whoever made that deal. Yeah.
So, because you would think if you were the comics, you would want the comics to sort of transform to look like, to mirror what you're seeing on the screen in this
right,
big book.
To sell some more comics.
Right, they couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow. So, okay, so just Zod.
Right.
And Zod was from Krypton.
Right.
And that makes sense that his sort of sidekicks were just in there.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah. And
the Phantom Zone was not from the movies. The Phantom Zone was from the comics. And it was, again, this idea that Jor-El, Superman's father, had created this way of imprisoning the worst villains by putting them in this sort of formless void.
Right.
Rather than killing them.
Right, right.
And then the irony is that, of course, they all survive the destruction of Krypton because they're in the Phantom Zone.
Right. They get out.
Right. So they eventually get out. Yeah.
Now, I saw the first season and a half of Supergirl and don't know why I stopped watching it.
Don't know why you stopped.
Yeah, because is it still on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I loved it.
Yeah.
Her boss was my favorite.
Yeah. Calista Flockhart.
Calista Flockhart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't remember anyone's name. So that's why I'll be referring to people by their characters' names.
Gotcha.
And these are actual humans. Rangers know that. So, but Calista Flockhart was my favorite character. The woman who plays Supergirl.
She's great.
She's great.
Yes.
She has this great heart to her.
Yep.
That is that comes through.
Earnestness. Again, that's the key. The key element of all superheroes, if you're playing them on the screen, is some sort of earnestness.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Which is weird because the guy who played the Flash and then now plays Captain America.
Right. Or Human Torch in Captain America. That guy, Chris Evans. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Human Torch.
Yeah.
Johnny Storm.
Yeah.
And it was he found the right level of earnestness for Captain America for some reason.
Yeah.
It was because it didn't work entirely for Johnny Storm.
No, but for Cap, it's like the best casting since Christopher Reeve.
Right.
Yeah.
He really is.
Yeah.
Yes. Agree. Okay, yes. But Supergirl, that was clearly a comic that, and you wrote some Supergirl too, didn't you?
Yeah, I've written.
Why wouldn't you?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know that I've read the Supergirl, your Supergirl stuff, but, and can be corrected. So, where are they now in the? Because there's so many. Why isn't there a Superman TV show?
Because Warner Brothers wanted to save him for the movies.
Okay.
And they worked out, the people who did the Supergirl TV show worked out some exemptions to the rule where they could get an actor to play a Superman for a couple of episodes here or there. But the blanket rule up to recently, and I don't know whether it's still in fact, in point was, no, we're saving Superman for the movie. That's why Batman doesn't have his own TV show. That's why Superman doesn't have his own TV show. It's why Wonder Woman doesn't. We're saving them for the movies.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. And but all their DC TV stuff seems to be excellent from what I've heard.
That's the isn't that interesting that Marvel has cracked the movies.
Right.
But their television shows are not great.
Right. It's hit and miss.
Yeah. Whereas DC can't crack the movies, except for Wonder Woman, they can't crack the movies.
Right. But
man, their TV shows are awesome. Yeah.
Right. Everybody is on board.
Yeah.
I don't watch enough television.
Yeah.
So literally, I there's no way to catch up at this point.
No, I know. I kept waiting for that magical week of my life where I'm going to be in bed with a flu for something. It's never going to happen.
Right. It turns out I also have the flu.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sleep. But I the only thing I watch is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And then Peggy Carter and then and now Cloak and Dagger.
Okay.
So it's I saw the first season of Daredevil. And D'Onofrio scared the shit out of me.
D'Onofrio was great in that role.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
And I can't possibly watch anymore.
Yeah.
I got to sleep at night.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Because I've been reading Daredevil forever, but it's not and not forever. I've only been reading the comics since 2003. I read Spider-Man when I was in junior high.
Okay.
And then I went away.
What brought you back?
Andy Ashcraft, my partner in crime here in our home, is always been a comic book fan.
Okay.
And so I went with him, and he mostly read the superhero stuff.
Right.
And I would weed off and go, well, what is this weird?
So what was the first thing you picked up after junior high that was like, this is my reintroduction into this world?
Well, he handed me a stack of top 10.
Okay.
Which is
by Alan Moore.
Where there's a dog. It's Hill Street Blues, but it's
Hill Street Blues with aliens and super
and animals,
science and stuff.
And it's
animals.
Amazing hilarious.
Yeah.
And then I think it was Sandman.
Yeah.
And then
the gateway drug to all.
Right. Yeah, and then Lucifer.
Right, yes.
And then then and I think I liked Lucifer better than Sandman initially. And then I went back and finished Sandman and I liked it. And because I didn't get it. It takes a second to it's sort of like my nephew gave me some manga and it's a learned skill to learn how to read manga.
Right. Yes.
And the same with comic books coming in.
This is what I keep trying to tell people who are in comics that are all upset that the whole world doesn't read comic books.
Okay.
Comics are like any other foreign language. If you learn it when you're a kid, you're proficient in it. But I teach at universities. I talk to adults everywhere about seeing comics for the first time. And adults want to know, well, how do I read this way? Do I read it across the spread? Or do I read it up and down? Or how do I read the comic? They don't even understand that, which we take utterly for granted.
Right.
But we shouldn't. It is a language.
Right. And Andy's been reading them since he was so little and never stopped.
Right.
That he looks at the whole page.
Yeah, yeah.
And he sort of absorbs it all.
Yeah.
And he'll see things in the background of panels because he actually went to college to for art.
Okay.
To draw comics.
Okay.
And then realized when he graduated from college that everyone who was an artist had been drawing the whole time.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't think I want to be an artist.
Yeah, yeah.
And what he had been doing was gaming. And so he's a game designer.
Right. Okay.
So, so he fell into that, but he's always loved them. And so he sees things like, he's like, are you reading? Did you see that thing in the background? That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I did not.
Okay.
Because I tend to read the words.
It's nice that you have a guided tour.
Oh, my God. The native Sherpa is very important.
Yeah, yeah.
I refer to him as my long box. That's a dick joke.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a hilarious dick joke. Anyway, but he has, so I think, who's the guy who wrote Howard the Duck?
Steve Gerber.
Okay. He also wrote, it was a short, it didn't end right because they cut him off. Yeah. But it was about a Columbine kid. It was a high school.
Yeah. And I'm blanking on what the name of that was. It was a DC comic.
And it was fascinating. Yeah. And I just picked it up and I was like, well, what is this? And he was like, I don't know, but it's the guy who wrote Howard the Duck. I'll read it. And so I would end up finding sort of the, led us in weird directions that he wouldn't have gone to.
Well, that's cool. I mean, that's the other thing that people don't seem to realize is that comic books is not superheroes. Comic books is a medium. You can tell whatever kind of story you want to tell with comic books.
When I started looking at them, I was like, it's like stand-up comedy. Right. It can be about anything.
It can be about anything, exactly.
By anyone.
Yep.
For anyone.
Exactly.
Which is delightful if you are someone that isn't a straight white guy.
Right.
Because then you're psyched.
Yes.
You're like, oh my God.
Someplace I might be able to see myself. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's he gave me the three fingers. You know, the Mickey Mouse?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that one?
I think so, yeah.
Like, he thought that I wanted to only read weird one-offs at a certain point. So he started trying to find me. And I was like, well, what's, I don't know, what's Captain America doing?
Yeah.
And I didn't know what Captain America was because I just saw a guy with a flag.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that guy's probably an asshole.
Right, exactly.
And then you read him and you're like, oh, no.
No.
No, he believes in the ideals and the dream.
Not the process. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not supporting those that are using it for their own good, for their own advancement. So it's one of the greatest things about comic. And I've written this comic book, and I worked with a Dark Horse editor guy.
Yeah.
And the process was fascinating, because I had never written a script of that sort.
Right.
And so it's – whether it gets made or not is
– what did you find to be the biggest challenges?
I didn't tell him that it was at night. That was the first big challenge.
Little things like that.
Yeah.
Important. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the woman drawing it, she was going to want to put some nighttime in there.
Yeah.
And I think because what I did was I took one of my longer jokes, like a storytelling kind of bit, and turned it into this script and – it allowed it to flesh it out.
Yeah.
And what I'm used to in stand-up is tightening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not used to being allowed to come up with a lot of details and a lot of angles and a lot of subtlety.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the most interesting thing for it.
And when you're writing a script, you're the cinematographer, you're the writer, you're the director, you're all of these things. You have to bear all this stuff in mind as you're writing the script.
Right.
You have to remember to tell them things like, it's night.
Right.
Or here's what's happening in the background, or here's, you know.
People compare it to storyboarding.
Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't seem like, I don't know a lot about storyboarding.
It's like storyboarding, except you're using words instead of pictures, which is infinitely more complicated. You're having to spend 50 words to explain what you're looking at, whereas in a drawing, you can do it boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
Right. So, like, if you draw the storyboard, it goes with the script.
Yeah.
But the script, when you're doing it to send it to the artist.
Yeah.
Is more complicated
and more complete. It's even more complicated than a TV script or a movie script because you're also including, you're calling every shot.
Right. So you're currently, what books are you writing right now?
Okay. So
there's
several. Right now, I'm actually, at this moment, I've decided to take a little bit of time just to relax a little bit. So I'm only doing like three or four.
Oh.
but right now I'm doing Doctor Strange at Marvel.
That's right.
Which is great. I mean, it's great fun to do. We had run out of characters for me to do. Really, we'd sat around and gone, okay, well, I'm coming off of Captain America for the fourth time.
Right.
What do I want to do? Well, I've done every other Marvel character. Doctor Strange. I haven't done Doctor Strange. Let's do Doctor Strange for a year.
That's right.
So there's that. I'm also still doing some Archie comic stuff here and there.
I read the Archie Zombie one.
Not mine, but still.
Right. Which one did you?
Actually, I was doing the mainstream straight up.
Okay.
This is, but they came to me, this is 4 or 5 years ago. They said, we want to reinvent the whole look of this thing. We don't want it to be, you know, jokey. You want it to be a little funny.
With some layers.
But some layers and a little more, you know, a little more sort of teenage oriented.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I'm 53 years old, right? And they said, no, you know, we think you can do this. And so it wasn't as much of a challenge as I thought it was going to be because, you know, getting in the heads of teenagers, it's impossible if you're going to just try to Snapchat your way through it. I'm going to throw the word Instagram in and hope it'll, you know, hope it'll age well. No, that crap doesn't age well.
Right.
Slang doesn't age well. This is why Daniel Waters, when he did Heathers,
right,
invented every bit of slang in that movie. Every word of slang in that movie, every expression is invented by him because he wanted specifically to make sure that it never dated.
Okay.
So nobody says, gag me with a spoon. Nobody says,
talk to the max or whatever.
So with Archie, it's the same thing. I'm trying to come up with my own stuff and remembering what it was like to be a teenager because, yes, my high school experience is different than a 30-year-old's high school experience was, is different than a current high school's vastly different experience. But there are certain things that are universal, right? Everybody remembers the first kiss.
Right.
Everybody remembers the first time they screw up in front of the whole class. Everybody remembers the big moments. It's all high opera.
Right.
When you're a teenager, everything is high opera all the time.
Right.
So you remember that, then I can write Archie comics.
Yeah.
So that became a lot of fun. And it gave a place to do stuff that isn't superheroes, that had heart and humor to it.
Right. And so I think I'm slightly behind.
Yeah.
Wait, you finished Daredevil.
I finished Daredevil. I finished everything. I'm looking at your list upside down. I seem to have finished all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I just did an Ant-Man story for about five issues of Ant-Man, which was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to do a microscopic character for a while because I'm a physics geek.
Okay.
I minored in physics in college, and so this is my big passion. So it's fun to do. I mean, it's comic book science. You still have to – every once in a while, if it comes down to – drama versus hyper-accuracy, you're going to have to come down on the side of drama.
Right.
But try to make it as realistic as you can.
Right, right. And try to invent new physics.
Yes.
Which you can do with the magic of a pen.
With the magic of a pen.
Yeah. I have a friend who teaches physics, AP physics.
Okay.
I famously, in my mind anyway, asked her, so have we... Literally, and I was dead serious, I asked her, so have we figured out a way to control gravity? And she was like, wow, no, not at this time. Not at this time.
We're a couple of centuries behind that, at least. Yeah.
The journey continues.
Yeah.
And, but my math and science skills are very basic, so I can make change.
So that's pretty much the hit list right now.
So those are the three you're working on right now?
Right now. And then there's other stuff that I'm working on that hasn't been announced yet, but there's –
Sure.
I also do a lot of creator-owned stuff. I like to do the stuff that's my own.
Yeah.
I have to do through Marvel or DC that I can just publish on my own and is my
stuff.
Is
that Kingdom Come
too? No, that wasn't. But actually, Irredeemable and Incorruptible were also I own a piece of them. They're not fully creator-owned. Empire is something I did with an artist named Barry Kitson. That was basically what happens when the villains win.
Okay.
The whole concept is there's the most powerful man in the world, the greatest supervillain. He wins, but our story starts like the next day. What happens when you've won? Well... The idea was he had a 10-year plan.
Yeah.
And 7 years in, he knew two things. One is that he was going to win.
Right.
And the other one was he didn't want the job anymore. Because once you're king of the world, and this sounds like comedy, but we play it as Shakespearean tragedy.
Yeah.
Once you're king of the world, all it means is that everybody is gunning for you.
Everyone's gunning for you, and you still have to get the water to work.
Yes, yeah. It's range on time. So, so that's Empire. So that's
awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that there's a bunch of other little stuff I've done over here and there that I still want to get back to. So yeah.
Right. Okay. That is neat. And then, by the way, everyone, it's Mark Waid. That's who I'm talking to. It's at Mark Waid, W-A-I-D. And is there a markwaid.com?
There is a markwaid.com.
Okay. So, but Twitter is mostly.
True. Although I don't hang on Twitter so much these days. It's a toxic.
It's it's a bit of a cesspool now.
Oh, it's right. So, a bit of a cesspool is quite an understatement. Yes.
Yeah. The great thing about doing stand-up comedy is that I don't have any problem blocking hecklers.
Yeah.
Like it's my comedy club.
Right.
I'm like, oh, well, you don't have to like me. Turns out, knock yourself out.
Exactly.
Go forth. And if I always think if hecklers or trolls think that they've won that I've blocked them, then we both win.
Exactly.
I hope it all works out for them.
I tend to favor muting other than blocking.
Right.
Because with muting, they still get to scream into the void thinking that they're being heard, and they're not.
And they might get something out of that.
They're in the phantom zone at that point.
Right, exactly. You put them in the phantom zone.
Yes.
Okay, before we go, and we're close, but I want to hear what your second favorite, because you told the first one as a kid that you read, the Superman Billion Dollars.
There's a prose novel. The prose novel was written in 1979 by a guy named Elliot Magan.
Huh.
Who's my favorite Superman writer.
Okay. How do you spell Magan?
M-A-G-G-I-N.
I-N. Okay.
And he wrote a Superman novel called Last Son of Krypton, original story.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, he wrote – and then he wrote a second one that's my favorite is Miracle Monday. It's a second sequel called Miracle Monday. That's a great story. It is basically Superman versus the devil. He's not really called the devil, but he's Satan. He's Superman versus – and so the ultimate Superman story, how do you defeat
– Mm-hmm.
And in it, there is, I know I'm running over time.
Oh, that's okay.
We didn't talk about Luther.
Right. And we haven't talked about Brainiac.
Right. So the short version of Luther is Luther grew up in Smallville along with Clark Kent and mm-hmm. was a disturbed kid, like a really – like the kind of Stephen Hawking genius that only comes along once in a generation but emotionally disturbed. And then Superboy does something accidental, thoughtlessly,
right.
and destroys his experiments, destroys his lab, destroys everything that young Lex has built.
Ah.
And so Lex – that's the final piece that snaps Lex. And like he just becomes focused on, I hate Superman for the rest of my life. I will do everything I can to destroy Superman because he destroyed me.
Right.
Which is, again, a very oversimplified way of looking at the world. But again.
But if he's psychotic.
He's psychotic. Exactly.
Right.
But there is a part of Superman that always knows, if I just thought for 1 second before I did this thing.
Right.
I could have. It's not exactly my fault.
Right.
I did what I thought was best at the time, but if I just done it differently, if I thought, taken one more second to really scope out the situation before I did this thing, then Lex wouldn't have snapped.
Right.
And I have cost the world
so
much.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Superman's cross to bear. And so there's a part of him that misses the Lex that he knew because he also, the kid was brilliant. The kid was the Superman's, Superman's super smart.
Yeah.
Lex is a genius.
Yep.
The two of them as kids, they were friends because they were the only two people in this little tiny town in Kansas
right.
who could see beyond, the horizon.
Yeah.
So there's a scene, there's a time traveler in the story. Superman wins, time traveler, sits down with Superman and Superman says, listen, can you tell me one thing? And time travel says, I can't. I really can't. Can't tell you about the future. I said, I'll add one question. Ask me one question. So Superman says, he thinks about it and he says, will Lex and I ever be friends again?
Yeah.
And the time traveler pauses and says, someday.
Okay.
And that is my favorite Superman moment.
Yeah.
Because it's not about punching stuff.
Right.
How vulnerable are you at that moment to be like that? That's all I want to know is, can I have my friend back someday?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing because I genuinely thought you were going to say that he goes back in time and corrects that error.
No. But,
and then we see what Lex Luthor – because – and this is cynical.
Yeah.
Because my thing is that when you make an error when you're a child like that, it's – You've sent Lex Luthor on a different trajectory.
Right.
If he's psychotic, something else sends him on that
right.
trajectory.
Whether it's an unforced error or a forced error,
right.
it's still going to happen. But if you're Superman,
right, you take the weight of the world.
You take the world on you exactly,
yes.
And you don't necessarily. He doesn't go through his life thinking it's my fault.
Right.
But he does go through his life thinking,
yes,
maybe.
Right.
If I had done something different, would it have made things different?
Right.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Okay.
So, wow. Okay. So,
look at what you've learned today.
Look, I've learned so much, and it's and because Lex Luthor, there was a point where Lex Luthor was president. I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
how would we ever? I remember when we did that story. This is like 1996.
Yeah.
We elected Lex Luthor president of the United States, and everyone in the DC universe was like, this is ridiculous. We would never elect a corrupt businessman with psychotic
right.
edge to the highest office in the nation. This
and
is
then
absurd.
And then of a sudden,
yes,
it's
we're telling the future.
Telling the future. But the weird thing is that I do think that there's a lot. There's so much. You were saying that there. You know that Superman isn't real.
Right.
I know that the Lord of the Rings isn't real.
Right.
And
right.
I know that right. Harry Potter isn't real.
Right.
But I have a genuine belief
mm-hmm.
that people who write things like Superman
yeah.
and write things that affect at such a visceral level
yeah.
that world exists.
Yeah, there's something real to it. Absolutely exists.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's part of me that – and this – I'm going to sound like a crazy person, but that there's a parallel – that there is parallel universes.
Fair enough.
Where, because I don't necessarily think we're that smart.
No.
That it's the bleeding through
yeah.
and the stories of these things that create these heroes.
That could be.
Is something that actually gives me some sort of solace.
It gives me some place to go on vacation.
Right. And the end of Irredeemable.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of does.
Kind of circles around to that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's kind of fascinating, too.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. We're exactly at an hour.
Okay.
Mark Waid, this has, of course, been a delight.
Well, my pleasure.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Anytime.
And everyone, go find – there's thousands of things that you could read that
there's,
Mark Waid.
I've literally written 2,000 things. There's That's it's not an exaggeration. It's 2,000 things. You can find something.
Knock yourself out, you guys. And so thank you so much for doing the
show.
My
pleasure.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?